This episode of The Guild is brought to you by Creative Edge. Creative Edge specializes in getting exposure for independent writers and authors and artists of all type. They specialize in arranging events such as book signings, library or school presentations, or any event related to the arts in general. If you are interested in seeing what Creative Edge can do for you, go into www.creative-edge.services. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Guild, the podcast of the Writers, Artists, and Readers Guild. I am your host, Chris Mary Holtzman. This episode should have actually come out last week, but I unfortunately contracted some horrible disease. Not sure if it is COVID yet or not. I am still, waiting on the test results, but it is as maybe. We'll just jump into the show today. It is a very special guest, and I hope you will enjoy our talk. We chat about so many different things, and I believe that it would be perfect to have her on the show to just talk about what an author needs to start out. Karina Kantas is our guest today.
At this time, like to welcome Karina Kantas to the Guild podcast, the podcast for writers, artists, readers, and everything in between. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris. Pleasure to be here.
I'm so glad that we could do this. We had a little bit of a snafu. We were supposed to do this earlier, the end of last week, but I kind of had a little bit of personal things to do, so we could get this done now, which is actually quite good because we had a horrible storm in my part of the world and like trees blew down and my internet connection just completely vanished. So it was probably for the best.
Oh, wow.
How are things in your part of the world?
Good, good. We're coming up to our own Easter. We are like 2 weeks behind our Easter is in May. They've started fasting now for the ones that follow the tradition, because of course over here we're calling from Greece, and the Greek Orthodox are very strict when it comes to Easter. Yeah. Even though we're still on strict lockdown, so there won't be any walking around with the candles, there won't be any walking around the village and the big parades and the festivals that we normally have. They've all been cancelled for the second year running now, which is a shame. So celebrations will be indoors.
Yeah. I mean, that is a shame of all things, but I mean, it is what it is. Hopefully it's the last year we'll have to do like this. We'll have to be like
this. Let's hope so. Yeah.
So you like me, you're an expatriate, sort of. You're a UK writer based in Greece. What brought you to Greece?
I came on holiday with my sister. She was 16. And first time flying, first time abroad, and met my husband in one of the first cocktail bars we went into. And I was there for 2 weeks. And when we got together, my poor sister was left on her own for the rest of the holiday. And I had a wonderful time with my now husband. Went home, quit my job. Came back over. It hasn't been easy. I mean, I've been back to England a couple of times at the beginning of the relationship. Very, very difficult over here if you don't know the language.
Yeah, I can imagine. Because, I mean, I don't know. I've never been to Greece, but I imagine that, I mean, you probably make yourself understood with English, but I imagine that maybe not everybody speaks it.
Well, exactly. I mean, in the tourist area, which is closer, just down like 8 kilometers from where we live, everyone speaks English, but his family didn't speak any English. And that was where the problem was. And of course, they'd seen how the English girls act as drunken tourists.
Yeah.
So I had a lot to prove, basically, before I was accepted.
So what do you do in Greece? Or are you, I mean, you're a writer, you have 14 published books, you podcast and everything like that. Is that your main focus, or do you have a day job?
Yeah, well, I'm what you call retired because of illness.
Okay.
I have a disability and many, many serious health conditions, but so I work from home, and I have my own business, Author Assist, which has been going for 5-6 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And basically I help other authors with their marketing and promotion. I teach them how to use important author tools that they don't know about, and I start every from the beginning, right from the brainstorming an idea, right through to the end, the publishing, marketing. I have about 30 services that I offer them, and affordable services, because I know how costly it is to publish and market your own book. So when I first started, I knew nothing. And so everything I've learned over the years, I wanted to give back to other authors that are in the same position of not knowing what to do once their book's published, or wanting to publish and not knowing what to do. So that's why I'm here, and it's been going 5 years. It's a one woman show. I do everything myself. I work about 10 hours a day, 5 days a week, and I love doing what I do.
Publishing the 14 books that you've published, are they all self-published, or have you used some kind of publisher to put them out?
Yeah, I started off self-published. I got burnt a couple of times at the beginning. We're talking back in like 27 years ago, when everyone was looking for agents and publishers. And there was no Kindle, of course. It was all paperbacks at the time. And so I got burnt a couple of times, learnt my lesson. Had contracted for one book that lasted a year because they did zero marketing. So yeah. I took the contract, took me a book back. Right now, I am contracted with a publisher for my clean YA fantasy duology.
Mm-hmm.
That's contracted, and we've just released the audiobook, which is really, really exciting, because I've been wanting to do that since the book was published in 2016. It was really important to me to get that audiobook done for Illusional Reality, and it's finally here, and it's like a dream come true. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I've been offered a contract for my erotica dystopian sci-fi, which is co-written with another author. she's kept her side clean, and I've got mine a little bit spicy. So exactly the same book, but it's two different versions offered to the reader.
Oh, okay.
And we're actually doing a trilogy. The first one, we created such a world, we couldn't just leave it behind. So we got together on camera a few months ago and just went straight through and got the synopsis for book two. We've been working on that. We already know where we're going on book three. And then we've both been offered a contract of the full trilogy for that book. And I'm looking for a publisher for my book that I've just finished, which is a dark romance mafia thriller. So I'm looking for a publisher for that. But the rest of my books are self-published, and I'm proud to be an indie author.
Yeah. Do you think it's difficult? Because, I mean, as indie publishers, we rarely stick with one publishing house, an indie publishing house. But do you find that's difficult to have to go out and look every time that every time you have a new book, or does the publisher that you have your YA book with, I mean, are they interested, or this erotica book? Was there an option to use them for this new book that you're looking for?
It's neither of them would definitely not take Broken Chains. It has to be someone who will accept a book that breaks the rules, that is tells the truth and is very raw, violent, explicit. We're talking about three mafias here, and I don't sugarcoat it. So yeah. It has to be a publisher that's willing to take something as strong as that on. So it's definitely not YA. I was very lucky with my publishers because I never looked for them. They came to me. So when she offered me, because Illusional Reality, the first book, was already published since 2016 and was doing very, very well by itself. The Quest, the second book, The End of the Duology, was ready to go, and I was ready to publish it myself. And when she offered me the contract, and I was like, because I can't, for some reason, being in Greece stops me from doing audiobooks with ACX.
Okay.
For maybe tax purposes, I don't know. So as a narrator myself, I couldn't narrate my own book. And as an author, I couldn't get a narrator to do it either. So that is the main reason I went with a publisher for Illusional Reality, was that because she's in the UK, she was able to do the audiobook, which, like I said, has been my dream. And so I signed that contract for the two books and the box set, of course, and the audiobook. And the co-author I'm working with the trilogy of Toxic, she's the one who told me that we've been offered a contract. So yeah, they came to me.
Oh, but, that's very nice.
yeah, it's really nice. But I will be self-publishing Broken Chains if I don't find a contract for the book, if I don't find a publisher, whether it's a hybrid or a small press. If they're willing to take the book on, I'll sign on the dotted line. If not, I will self-publish it myself. I've been doing it for the last 27 years, so I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, I mean, do you think? I mean, these services that you provide, that's something that you've learned by self-publishing your books, I assume.
Yep.
You've kind of done a trial and error so that the rest of us don't have to fall into those falls.
Exactly. I know exactly what to avoid and what a author needs to learn and what tools they need in their laptop to help with the publishing and marketing, and to be confident to do it, because a lot of authors, when they're starting out, they're not 100% confident in their book because of they've had their neighbor edit the book, they've had their best friend be to read it, and of course we all know that that's the wrong way to go, but that's how most authors start out, because they don't realize they need a professional cover, they need a professional author, they need their book formatted professionally before they can even think about publishing. It needs to be polished, and you know, that's how it starts. But a lot of authors just want to get that book out and rush and get it done, and unfortunately you only get one chance, you know, before you start getting those one star reviews.
I'd like to dive into that a little bit more, because I mean, both you and I are in various author groups, whatever they might be called, the author like network group, or you know, there's a bunch of stuff on Facebook, and you see a lot of people there putting out like questions like, how do you like my cover, which cover do you like better, I have this book that I'd like to write, or I mean, what goes through your, because I have a very like clear vision of what goes through my mind when I see these kind of things, and I see like, I would like to write a book, how do I go about it? There's a lot of people that don't, you know, it seems so unrealistic what they're trying to do. I mean, what goes through your mind when you see those kind of posts where people are just kind of like randomly saying, I want to do this and I want to do that? Or
thanks to Amazon, boo. everyone can become an author, whether they can write or not. And that's bad. That's bad for people like us that have written books, take it seriously, want to make a career out of it. It's bad when someone doesn't take it seriously and wants to bring out a book that should never have been written or published in the first place. But I'm known around the community on Facebook as being someone who's very blunt and honest. So if someone asks my opinion on a cover or a blurb, I will give it to them. Whether they want to hear the truth or not, they will get it. And I'm known for that. So, you know, when people ask, they know they're going to get the truth from me. And of course, if someone contacts me through Author Assist and says, I really need your help with publishing my book, then we will start from the beginning. And of course, it's not just about publishing the book. You've got to have social media presence before that even happens, you know. So this author who's not an author yet but wants to be an author, I would start off with the social media presence first before even talking about the book. And then once a book's written and it's polished and ready, you're talking at least 3 months before for marketing, to get it ready and your marketing plan all set up before the book can be there for the public.
Yeah, it's sometimes the one thing that because obviously as a writer, and I know not everybody does this, but I mean, I do, you struggle a lot with it, you know, is what I'm putting out good enough? Is the writing strong enough? Is anybody going to be interested in this story that I've written? But it seems like to me that there's a lot of people, and now I know I'm kind of generalizing here, but if you look at on Facebook, there seems to be a lot of people from like the non-developed part of the world that seem to have a very high consideration for their own production. What do you think that comes from? Because I see a lot of people that maybe come from India or come from some country in Africa that put out books, and especially self-help books. And I kind of wonder, is where do they get their confidence from?
I run a children's and illustration group on Facebook, and there's so many Indian and Pakistani authors and illustrators from Fiverr that want to promote on the group, but for the children books, I don't see a problem with them. You know, that the cover looks beautiful and they advertise it correctly on the site, and of course buying a book for them, one of our books, would be maybe 2 days' wages. You know, there's a big difference in price. So for them to publish a book, self-published or even with a publisher from India, is easy for them than it is for us. And but self-help books, I see a lot of copying going on there. And I see a lot of books with like 28 pages that Amazon, of course, allowed to be published. But maybe when the reader buys it, they don't realize that it's only 15, 20 page book. And this person has like 20, 30 books. And you think, oh, wow, you know, they've got 20, 30 books. They know what they're talking about. And then you see how many pages there are, and you see the reviews and what have you. And a lot of self-help books are definitely, definitely copied. I don't think they know what they're talking about. And that's why.
I often ask in those groups, like, what are your credentials in saying these, you know, doing these kind of things or putting these things out there?
Yeah.
And I think there's also a lot of different, to me, I mean, obviously, our world is, in a lot larger than it was before, you know, because of the internet and you can contact people and stuff like that. So, or that's smaller, the world is smaller is what I wanted to say. But at the same time, we're all kind of in like our bubbles, and things that may be motivational and self-help or obvious in India or Pakistan or something like that wouldn't be for the world at large. I mean, we don't have the same belief systems. We don't have the same issues or the same problems. So, these self-help books might not help you or I.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, the radio show that I'm host, I had it on, we were live worldwide on Friday, and I actually had, because I don't do a lot of non-fiction on the radio, I like doing fiction and chatting with people of the right genre, but both of them were non-fiction authors and both of them had a self-help book. I was like, oh no, you know, what do I ask them? And how am I going to get on with this? And it was amazing. It's one of my favorite programs. They were fantastic. They knew exactly what they were talking about. They were funny. We talked a lot about situation in large and not about what's in their book itself. To show that they knew what they were talking about and they had the credentials to do what they were doing. And it was one of my favourite shows, and that really sort of blew me away that it went so well, and I really enjoyed talking to them. It just goes to show that there are people out there that do write self-help books and they are qualified to do it. And these books will help people in certain situations. Mm. And then, like I said, you've got those that learn from other people and then go out and make a book because they've learned how to do something from someone else and decide to write it in a book and sell off that person's idea. But of course you learn from other people, you learn from books, you learn from webinars, and of course I have to keep up to date for my clients of what's going on. I mean, the trend changes all the time when it comes to marketing and promotion, and I need to, if I'm going to be good at my job, I need to keep up with the trend. So I go to webinars and I learn, but I don't write a book and then sell it off my ideas, you know. But I know some people that I've been used by for that situation, and that wasn't good. But again, there's not much you can do about that.
No. Let's talk a little bit about your writing career. 14 books in. When did you get started?
I was writing short stories and stuff when I was in my upper school. And in the UK, we're talking 14 upwards. Mm. And so I had lots and lots of ideas and short stories written. It wasn't until I came to Greece, and I'm in the middle of nowhere in this little Greek village full of old people and donkeys, that the winter was very boring, and I needed to have something to do. And I had two talents, and that was singing and writing. So because I couldn't do singing over here, I didn't speak Greek, so I couldn't take my singing career anywhere in a small village. I decided to take my writing more seriously, and I had this 18-page short story that I picked up and I just started working on, and one page ended up being 20. And by the time I got through these 18 pages, I had a novel. It was like magic happened. You know, I just started typing away, looking at this one page, typing away, and all of a sudden this one page was 20 pages. And I'm like, what's going on here? You know, this had never happened. This is my first experience of being in the zone,
yeah,
in the author's zone. And it was so magical. And it was such a wonderful experience for that to happen. And of course, as a new writer wanting to get the book published, I went through submissions with agents and publishers and got so many rejections that I decided, you know, I'm going to do it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found a Christian, and I put speech marks, hashtags, whatever, on top of that. They used it for to draw people in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the ones that I got burnt with badly. And all the authors took this publisher to court. We won the case. They went bankrupt. We didn't get a penny back. And then the next week, they're out again with a different name.
Yeah.
And there are still very many vanity presses that will take advantage of authors out there that were so desperate to get their book published. And when I finally got my contract back, as far as I know, they're still publishing the first book, and there's nothing I can do about that. But I took the book back and got a new cover and went with Lulu, which I've been with for 27 years for paperback. And once ebooks came out, I then joined, of course, with Amazon KDP. And then learnt about draft digital, and yeah, went with them as well. And so, that was my first book, In Times of Violence. And I was inspired and became a writer because of the author Essie Hinton.
Oh, yeah.
And her book and the movie based on her book, The Outsiders. And it was that book that made me into an author.
Yeah, there's always like that one book, I think, that makes you say like this, I want to, and you and I talked about that on your show. There's like this one book that is that maybe like piques your interest in what you says, like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
I want somebody to feel the same thing as I'm feeling right now. Yeah. But when they're reading my words or my story. And Essie Hinton's, it's very interesting because, I mean, I think Essie Hinton very rarely gets enough credit because, I mean, there's Outsiders and there's The Warriors, right? Wasn't they?
No. She did The Outsiders. She did Rumblefish. She did That Was Then, This Is Now. She did Tex. And Taming of the Star Runner.
Okay, then I was thinking it was somebody else.
I've heard of them all, you know.
Yeah.
Addicted to that type of outsiders not fitting in and feeling like they don't belong anywhere, and then finding this family, a brotherhood that would bleed for each other, that would die for one another, and having that closeness with this this group. And so that's how my first series came out, called The Outlaws, which were about motorcycle clubs, outlaw motorcycle clubs, and just not wanting to abide by the law and abide by society's rules and being their own person to do what they wanted to do, and to have that close, again, that close unity family. That even though they're not related, they could be, they're actually closer than their own family, because they all are the same. They all feel like outsiders, and they find this group that feel the same way. And that's what I loved about S.E. Hinton's books, and that's what I wanted to do in my books, is to write about a group that just didn't feel like they belonged anywhere, and then they become the brotherhood or the sisterhood, and the story goes on there. But again, I'm writing about outlaw motorcycle clubs, so there's no candy floss and chocolate hearts. They're very raw, they're very gritty, they're very true to life, not all of them have happy endings, because realistically, life doesn't always have happy endings. So, I wanted to be truthful like that. So that was the Outlaws. That was four books in that series. Only the first two were actual sequels. The second book was a sequel to the first, but the third and fourth had nothing to do with the first two. They were put in a series because, as I said, they were all outlaws in their own right. And so that's why they became a series of books.
I often tell my students when we talk about creative writing that it is very important not to pull your punches, to be as raw and as true and in a way uncomfortable as possible.
Yes.
That is something that you subscribe to as well.
Yes, most definitely. And especially for the first book, I always tell my authors to write about what you know. Don't write a book about a brain scientist, because you don't know nothing about that surgery and about being a brain scientist. So write about what you know, write about your own experiences, write about what you've been through, because that will come through emotional, it will come through in depth, it will come through raw, because you've experienced that yourself, so you can really dig deep into what how you felt and what happened at the time. And when a reader reads that book, and while you're writing, you can see the scene, of course, you've been through it, so you're writing it, and you hope that when the reader reads it, it will play as a movie to them. If it's written correctly, they can see exactly the same scene going in their head when they're reading those pages, and then you know that you've done the right thing.
Do you ever encounter authors or people that come to you for help and say, like, I want to write, but I don't know what to write about? I want to be a writer, but I don't know how to go about it. As not in, like, I don't know what program to use or how to market it. In this is like, actually, like, I don't know what to write about.
No, I've never had that. I've had them come with me with an idea, but no idea what to do with the idea. But not to actually say, I want to be a writer, what shall I write about? No.
No. I would assume that that's probably, if you were to encounter somebody like that, you might say, well, maybe you should come back when you have an idea.
No, I would say exactly what I said to you. Write about what you know. Write about something. Start off with something that's happened in your life that impacted you, and go from there.
if you look at the book market as it is today, and you look at all the stuff that is being written and things, I mean, I see a lot of similarities. I see a lot of same stuff happening. And then obviously there's nothing new under the sun. I mean, you can tweak it and you can and change it around and play with a genre and stuff like that. But if somebody were an aspiring writer and they had an idea, would you ever recommend them saying like, no, I think the market is a little bit too flooded with that kind of story right now. Maybe try to do something different with it, but the same motif or the same theme.
Oh, I would definitely, I wouldn't say to them, no, don't do that. I would definitely advise them to carry on with what they're doing. But yeah, make it obvious that you're in a very, very large market. You've got a lot of competition. If you want your book to stand out, you need to do something a little out of the box. So stay in that genre if you want to write fantasy, but do something different. Stay in that thriller genre, but try not to be another Dean Koontz or Stephen King or Dan Brown. Be real and come up with an original idea that hasn't been done before, which is, it's not easy to do. It's especially for a first novel.
No.
They've read so many books and they've got so many ideas because of these books. And you've got to be very, very careful with that, that you don't realize that you've written something that you've actually read somewhere else before. Yeah. And that can happen so easily. So, a good imagination, thinking out of the box, definitely for a first-time novelist.
And I think what you said about writing what you know is that, I mean, just because you write what you know doesn't mean that it has to be exactly the same, I mean, exactly verbatim what exactly you know. On the last podcast, I talked to Nick Girard about that, and Nick Girard is a writer who writes very realistic stories. I mean, he's not really into fantasy or science fiction, although he is kind of venturing into those areas today. But we were talking about Tolkien, and obviously Tolkien's Lord of the Rings is.
Oh yes.
I mean, he wrote what he knew, but he did it in a very different way. I mean, obviously he could have sat down and he could have just written a book about his experiences in the First World War, which is basically what Lord of the Rings is about. But he put a spin on it and a twist on it. He wrote still what he knew. The emotions of being in war are still the same.
Yeah.
The war is different.
Yeah. Tolkien, I mean, it was Tolkien, Lord of the Rings, that inspired me for Illusion of Reality. Mm-hmm. And Illusional Reality has no hobbits, no dragons, no wizards, no goblins, no, what else in Lord of the Rings? No elves, no dwarves. Orcs, exactly. But it was Lord of the Rings that inspired me, but I've got none of those tropes, none of those stereotype fantasy characters in my book. And that's what makes my book unique, because everything is, it's from my imagination, the magic, the creatures, the people, the storyline. It's inspired by the amazing films of Lord of the Rings, but there's a whole different storyline and characters, and everything is unique in my books.
So what is your actual latest work? What is it? But if you want people to pick up your latest book and read it, what would you recommend? Or what is it that they should what should they pick up?
Well, Broken Chains, the first draft, is actually on Wattpad and Inkit.
Okay.
I did something I've never done before. I actually put my work out there before being edited, before it being polished, to get feedback, to see if I was going the right way, to see what people thought of it. And so I put it on Wattpad and Inkit. Every chapter that I wrote went straight on there. And the first draft will stay on there unless the publisher makes me take it off if I go with the publisher. Yeah. If I self-publish, then the first draft will stay on there. Already, the book has changed dramatically from the first draft, thanks to beta readers' comments and publishers' comment. It wasn't a publisher that would publish the book anyway, because they do sci-fi and fantasy, but it was a publisher that was really into that kind of loved mafia type books and really wanted to read it. Mm. And so, of course, once it was ready, I sent it to him, got some great feedback from him. And so when the final version comes out, it'll be very, very different from the first draft. But if you like violence and torture, and I put my character through hell and back. She goes through everything she could go through without getting too explicit on the podcast, but you can just imagine it is explicit. We're talking about torture, we're talking about three of the biggest mafias in the world and wanting her for some reason. I absolutely loved writing it. I'm still working on it now to make sure I do what the publisher and the beta readers all suggested. So if you like that kind of thing, then Broken Chains. If you love clean young adult fantasy, go for Illusional Reality, especially the audiobook that just came out 2 days ago. If you like short stories, flash fiction, I have three collections of flash fiction of all different genres, and I have one collection of flash fiction just for horror and suspense, if you like that kind of book. They're for, you know, reading before you go to bed, reading on the train, reading on the bus on the way to work, because they're so short. We call them 5-minute fiction or even 1-minute fiction. One story could be one page, and that's like 100, 200 words. And so they're very thought-provoking, and they have a lot of them have twists that make people go, wow. So that's what the reviews say on those. And of course, if you like a down-to-earth, sexy men in leather jackets and riding motorcycles, then the Outlaw series is for you. You had I was the first one to bring out something like that, and I did that because when I went to the library after reading Essie Hinton's books, there just weren't enough of those outlaw, outcast gang type of books. And so I knew there was a hole in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I wrote In Times of Violence, the first book. And then Sons of Anarchy came out, which is one of the best series ever made for TV, which was taken from my book, basically about outlaw motorcycle clubs and what goes on behind the scenes and these characters. And all of a sudden, the market was flooded with MC romance books by all these authors. They've gone on to just do one series after another of motorcycle romances. And how they can keep on going and keep up with new ideas and not copy their first ever book after writing 16, 17 books about different motorcycle clubs. I did four and that was it. I was finished. All my ideas were gone. You know, that I was done with. But these other authors that write in the same genre and just keep on publishing again and again, these books, I don't know how they can do it, how they get their ideas, how they keep it fresh for the reader.
I'm wondering if they do. I mean, to be completely honest, I mentioned this on the podcast before. When I studied literature in at the university, I think, I wonder if I even have. Well, we had to read two books. This one, Reading the Romance by Janice Radway, which is an excellent book. And then a book called, or a study called, Not a Day Without a Book, which was basically about the tradition of reading romance novels, or the Harlequin series, about like, because they had interviewed, I think, 100 readers of romance fiction to see what it was, what is it that's so appealing when it comes to romance. And we're not talking romance fiction as like an Outlander or Jean M. Auel's, Clan of the Cave Bears, not such advanced romance fiction, but more of like the 150 to 200 pages Harlequin novels that you'll find at a train station or stuff like that.
Yeah.
And they said that, I mean, the consensus or the conclusion of the study was basically what these people want is that they want something that's an easy read with tropes that they know, that they recognize. Yeah. Every story is basically exactly the same, just maybe with different character names. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there were people there that read maybe 4 or 5 books like a week of these and just plowed them. And the fun part was that in the study, they came to the conclusion that books that the people didn't care, the readers didn't care for, were books that broke the mold. Like where the ending was maybe not a happy ending, or where the bad guy gets the girl instead of the good guy getting the girl. So that was kind of interesting. And I think that is, romance novels and romance writing is a world that I'm very, very unfamiliar with apart from studying it.
Mm.
But I've never read them. I don't read them.
It's changed. It's gone the opposite way now. People don't want those Harlequin romances. They want it realistic. They want realistic characters that they can relate to. They want different romances, dark romances, romances with a triangle, love triangle, mm-hmm. a dangerous love triangle, which I've done myself. And those soppy romances, there are authors that still write them, and what they call the clean romances. And there are readers that will only read clean romances. And my mum was like going through 10 books a week of all these romances and Mills and Booms and Harlequin and historical romances. And she just went through them like you say, they were all the same. They were the same characters, a lord, a duke, and falling in love with a wench, a village girl or whatever, and I because the books are there, of course. Once I started reading, I picked them up and had a read of them, and they were so similar with one another, especially with the Mills and Booms. It was just all that the difference was with those books was the actual plot. You needed a plot, and then you use the same characters that have been in every other book. She doesn't like him. He's not too keen on her. They have to get together for a simple reason, and they end up falling in love. But that's not life. It doesn't happen like that. Refuse to write books like that. I do give some of my characters a happy ending. I really do, but most of them don't really get what they wanted, don't end up with what they wanted. And
I think an ambiguous ending is the best. Like what is going to happen next? I mean, I don't think that it has to always be an unhappy ending. My book stories very rarely have a happy ending, but they're not always unhappy. And
no,
it's just
they end differently. Ambiguous. They end. It doesn't, even if they have a happy ending, it's not a roses and Valentine's and getting married ending, you know that they're together and you know they've got a lot to go through. They've still got a lot of issues to sort out, but it's a happy ending. Yeah. That's the sort of book that people want to read. That's the sort of book that's more realistic to how life is nowadays.
Yes, and that's interesting because I spoke to Jacob Sanix, who is a British fantasy author, a couple of podcasts ago, and he was saying that his book, Dark Oak, is all about his fantasy novel, and it's actually a series. Dark Oak is basically about what happens after the final battle, you know, after good triumphs over evil. What happens to all those evil figures afterwards? They just don't disappear. What happens to all the trolls and all the orcs that are on the bad guy's side? Or if you have two warring nations that fight and there's a final resolution, something has to happen. I mean, you can't go to like any kind of status quo where everything is all roses again.
No.
There's a conflict there that hasn't really been resolved. And what happens after that? What happens in Lord of the Rings after the Dark Lord is gone? You know, what happens to all these evil characters? They don't just disappear.
Well, they did in Lord of the Rings.
In Lord of the Rings, they do.
They just turned to dust and they were gone. It was like, oh, gone.
and unfortunately, that's not a very good resolution in the end, but... Anyway, well, Karina, our time is quickly running short, and we could probably sit here and discuss. There's so many other things that I'd like to talk to you about.
Yeah.
If we could talk, I mean, I would love to talk more about like tips and tricks for budding authors, you know.
And I can do that any other time. Anytime you need me on, I'll be here and we can go through stuff like that for
a step-by-step guide, maybe.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. Well, if people are going to look for you on the internet, apart from following you on Amazon, where you have your books, and I looked it up, I mean, obviously you have quite the oeuvre, and I hope one day that I'll have as many books as you have out. But where can they find you otherwise, if they're looking for you and your services especially?
All right. Well, I have a website for Author Assist, which will be Kagantus Author Assist at wordpress.com. You can find me on Facebook under Kagantus. My trailers is under trailers, narrations by KK for the narrations I do, podcasts, Behind the Pen, the radio show, Author Assist. They are all on Facebook. They all have their own separate pages on Facebook. Mm. My books can be found wide as well as being on Amazon. So if you go to Barnes & Noble, just put my name, Karina Gantus, and whatever books are available will come up on there. You can find me on Twitter, on MeWe, on LinkedIn, on Goodreads, basically any social media platform. Except MySpace, because that's just for music now, but I used to be on MySpace when it first came out. So yeah, you can find me everywhere. And if you actually go to the Facebook page, Karina Gantus, and click on the banner, you'll have every single link to my books and every single link to my social media and all the links to my services that I provide are all attached to that banner. So that's the place to go to get everything. Otherwise, Google me, 74,000 pages will come up with Karina Gantus. And there's only two Karina Gantus. So there's an Indian singer and then there's a little old me. Oh. And I've been around for 27 years. And so there are lots of things to see on the wide web with the things that I've done over these 27 years.
So fun. That's a rabbit hole for somebody to dive into.
Most definitely.
Well, Karina, it was lovely having you on, and I would love to have you on the show again sometime.
Yes, it would be my pleasure. We could do a special author assist edition just for authors that will get some knowledge and get some help from it. But thank you so much for having me, and it's been a pleasure chatting with you today, Chris.
A pleasure. Well, thank you very much, and I will talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
What an interesting episode that was. So many things to talk about. I'm not even sure that we talked so much about Karina's books. We talked more about so much more about the writing process and everything else. I would like to thank Karina for coming on to the show. Check out my interview as I'm being interviewed by her on her show Under the Pen. I would like to thank Creative Edge for sponsoring this episode and sponsoring this podcast. I'd also like to thank John Holtman for providing the music, and I would like to thank you for listening. Find us on Spotify. Follow us on Spotify to help us get the algorithms up. Talk about us. Tweet us out. Facebook us out. Whatever you do. Until next time, my name is Chris Mayer Holtman. See you around.